Ah, you made it just in time. We're getting ready to head out on the wine road. One of the many benefits living here in wine country is having the time to discover exceptional wine producers in small, off-the-beaten-path tasting rooms. When you're here on vacation, you just don't have time to seek them out, unless you hear about them beforehand. I have one for you today, Paul Matthew Vineyards. Back in October, my wife and I attended a wine and food pairing at their tasting room in the little hamlet of Grayton in the Russian River Valley, Appalachian, and my goodness, was that a treat. The winemaker, Matt Gustafson, is a laid-back guy who's held a multitude of positions in his life, so he can talk on many subjects, and his wife, Barb, is cheery and full of energy. I felt you should get to know them. I'll talk with Barb a little later and start with Matt. The curious thing about him, I discovered, is he developed an interest in wine as a teenager while working at his uncle's store in Michigan, but it was a long and winding road before he became a winemaker.
Yeah, I think I did every job that was sort of involved in the wine industry, from stocking the shelves to being a sommelier and working in restaurants, and it really everything sort of went in the right direction for me. Even the job I thought was a waste of time driving forklift one summer ended up being great, because then when I became a winemaker, I already knew how to drive a forklift really well. So.
Well, I mean, it made sense that you got a hotel and restaurant degree, so hospitality, not a bad start. But the political science degree, that seemed a bit off course.
Well, I was really interested in those classes in school, and I was kind of waiting to get into the business school, which never kind of happened at Boulder. And so once I got close to having all the credits, I just went ahead and finished off the political science degree. And, there's a lot of political science involved in winemaking.
At least while going to school in Boulder, you worked at the Flagstaff House restaurant, which was a famed restaurant, and I'm sure you gained a lot of knowledge there.
Yeah, it was really a great experience. We had 2,000 wines on the wine list when I was working there. Now they have about 3,000. But just as an example, we had, probably 40 different vintages of Lafite Rothschild, starting with 1889. So there was a lot of depth in the list and a lot of really great wines, and we were kind of old school. We wore black tuxedos and we had a tastevin, so we were able to taste all of the wines before the customer. So we were able to really, it gave you a great incentive to sell a great bottle of wine, because you knew you got to taste it then. So that was really big, and it was a great way to put myself through school, but tough in the morning getting up to go to class.
And it was the Domaine Le Fleuve White Burgundy that really got you interested in the idea of making Chardonnay.
Have just such a stellar track record, and the wines are just so phenomenal. I mean, really, I think the best of Chardonnay. There are a few other producers in France that do as good a job occasionally, but not as consistently as Domaine Le Fleuve. And we were getting, I think, the whole allocation of Le Fleuve wines for the state of Colorado at that time, so we had quite a few on our list, and really great deals back then. The AC Pellini Montrachet was, I think it was $25 or $30 on our list, which you would never find today. So,
at least then, after that, you end up in Napa and at Joseph Phelps, so that was a good place to start in this area.
Yeah, I was working at Trevina Restaurant. I was part of the opening crew when I first came out to Napa Valley. And Bruce Nyers was a big customer of ours, and he was the vice president, head of sales for Phelps. And so he really liked me, and he got me doing tours part-time there. And I had to go back to Colorado to finish one semester of school to graduate. And so I did that and then came back and got a full-time job at Phelps.
But then there was another turn working with Phelps, and you ended up going to L.A. to be a sales rep.
Yeah, L.A. was really, I thought, a great experience at that time. Sales were going really well. I was selling the 85 Insignia back then, and so that really put a lot of money in my pocket, which was kind of nice. And with Phelps' reputation, I was able to really, get all of the best restaurants to taste with me. And so it really makes a big difference who you're working for and how much rejection you get during the sales process. It can be hard to handle sometimes.
Right, and again, a great education for you. For one, it's nice to, as a young man to put some money in your pocket. And the other, as they say in the wine business, it's easy to make the wine, but it's hard to sell it. And so you got that knowledge.
Yeah, that was really beneficial. And I think knowing how to sell wine before you become a winemaker really, it helps the process quite a bit because you know what to expect and you kind of, I think, make more sellable wine when you're thinking about having to sell it, and instead of being an afterthought, which I think for most people it really is just an afterthought. They just think their wine's going to sell because it's going to be great and everybody's going to love it, but it's not always that way. So,
and then you got into winemaking. No, there was a stop at John Ash and Company, and then you opened the Oakville Grocery in Healdsburg. So. Okay, you're getting off track again.
Well, you know, the Oakville Grocery, I went there because I was kind of getting tired of working nights and thought, well, I'll give retail a shot. You know, I'd worked retail when I was very young, of course, but going back to it after the excitement of the wine business, it was really boring. And so I found it really hard to do that job. It really wasn't something that I enjoyed. I'd much rather work in a restaurant. And so at that point, rather than go back to the restaurant scene, I just went back to the cellar and sharpened my cellar skills. And then within a year and a half, that's when we started Paul Matthew and started making my own wine.
But you had a business of your own as well, somewhere in that period. So you even did that for a little bit.
Yeah, while we had Paul Matthew going, we were also planting vineyards, and so that really kept the money rolling in for us. You know, with winemaking, of course, you've got a year to 2 years before you really start seeing any return on all of your investments, so it can be hard to get started, but luckily we had a good cash flow coming in with the vineyard company. We're really planting very small vineyards for people, and it was right before the hillside ordinance was coming through, so everybody wanted to beat the ordinance and not have to spend the money and bring in engineers and all of that. So we were quite busy for the first 2 or 3 years, starting in 1999.
And Joe Dutton must have been a big help for you.
Yeah, actually Warren was still alive back then, and he really sent a lot of customers our way. He had so many people that would call him to put in small vineyards, and they really didn't want to touch anything that was less than 20 acres. So that worked out really well for us. We were able to do him a favor and take care of these people, and then that also did us a favor by giving us business. So,
where were you making your wine then?
At that time I started at Joe Dutton's winery, Sebastopol Vineyards, and that's where we made our first Chardonnay. And then every year after that, about a year after I started Paul Matthew, I became the winemaker for Dutton Estate. And so that just really bled in perfectly for me making my wine there. So.
And then somehow you ended up with the highly respected Mary Edwards, who was a winemaker herself. So that must have been quite an experience.
Yeah, Mary was actually, working with her was just at Dutton Estate, and it was the first year that I was at Dutton Estate. And Mary was the consulting winemaker, so we overlapped just for that first year. And then after that year, Tracy and Joe had enough confidence in my winemaking that they let Mary go, and I was able to do all the winemaking on my own, and have been ever since.
Well, you must have learned a lot from her.
Yeah, definitely, especially, you know, quality issues, especially with bottling and really technical stuff she's really, really good at. We do have a little bit different winemaking philosophy. I'm more into natural wines. She isn't as much. So that was really probably the biggest difference in our winemaking styles. But again, it was really great to learn all of the details to get your bottlings perfect, which is really, really important. You know, people don't realize how important bottling is. It's probably the most stressful and kind of boring part of it, but if you don't get it right, you can mess up your vintage pretty easily with just at the very end.
Tell me about your winemaking style. You do have a definite idea about what you want to do.
We started off the first year that I had my label in 99. Aaron Jordan from Turley was my consulting winemaker. He and I worked together at Phelps. We were both in sales positions pretty much our whole time at Phelps. And when I would get promoted, he would get my old job. So it was kind of interesting. And then he went to France when he left Phelps, and I got back into being a sommelier. And then he came back and got hired by Helen Turley, because he knew how to do the pruning that she would like in her vineyards. And so really, a lot of it was his experience in France and then working with Helen. And so that kind of got him going in the low-input winemaking direction with native yeast. And so that's really how we started and how we've just done it ever since.
How long did it take before you were able to get the tasting room here in Grayton open?
This tasting room here, we're coming up on our fourth anniversary. So it took a while. We were, in those years prior to the tasting room, we were just selling everything to distributors, not really too much out of state, and then really just to local restaurants in San Francisco and Napa, Sonoma, Marin. Really having a great presence on wine lists, I think, really helped us out a lot. Doing a lot of public tastings, people knew our name and our brand, and so when they went to restaurants and saw the wine on the list, they would order it. And that's really big for the restaurants. The worst thing is if you sell a case of wine to a restaurant and you go back a month or two later and they, you know, ask them if they're ready for a reorder, and they say, oh, I still have 10 bottles. So, you know, you really need to get that sell through, and you need the grassroots kind of support. So really, there's a lot of work in the beginning building the brand, doing a lot of public tastings, doing a lot of tastings at B&Bs and restaurants, wine dinners, all of anything that will get your name out there, and doing a lot of charity tastings, things like that.
That's where that sales experience came in handy.
It's really amazing. All of it really just sort of comes down to hard work, and there's no magic bullet, I don't think. Unless, you know, you can get somebody to give you 99 points for your wine, then that might speed things up a little bit.
I should have asked, at what point were you able to leave the paying gig and just work on your own brand?
You know, that really hasn't completely happened yet, but it's pretty close there now. I'm just consulting for Motion Vineyards right now, which is, you know, not too time consuming. I have a pretty independent schedule doing that. And then just doing a lot more now at the tasting room. We're really getting into doing more of our food and wine seminars and those things. And so I'm able to do more of that and actually work in the tasting room more too. So it's really nice. The customers, I think, really like it when they get to talk to the winemaker when they're tasting their wines. So as long as they don't say anything bad about the wines.
They won't with you sitting there.
That's true.
So that's a nice segue, because I wanted to talk to Barb about your food and wine pairing dinners. And before I do that, when did Barb sneak into your life?
Barb and I met, we just had our 10th anniversary, and met at a wine event. And she was a sommelier that was attending, and I was a winemaker. And we kind of hit it off. And
because she liked your wine?
Yeah, I think
that probably helped, didn't it?
I hope so. So she was living in Santa Barbara at the time, and I was living up here. So we did a lot of trips back and forth. I got one speeding ticket, and she got one speeding ticket. So it wasn't too bad. She always claims that she drove up here way more than I went down there, but
she laughs in the background.
And she's probably a little bit right, but Santa Barbara was a beautiful place, and it was tough to get her to leave Santa Barbara and come up here, but we eventually got her up here in about 2005, and we've been in Guerneville ever since then.
Well, you had a brand to build. You couldn't be heading off down to Santa Barbara every half a month.
Yeah, it's true. You know, as much fun as it was, if there was stuff to do here, for sure, and you know, we decided that we were going to get a tasting room. We've got the right paperwork done for alternating premise for winery. And so once we had all that in place, then we really started looking for a place to have a tasting room. And luckily, we ended up here in Grayton, and it's just really an amazing facility. And a really great owner who's been really nice to us, and great people here. And it's with our private dining room and a fenced-in backyard, we really have a lot of space to spread out and have nice events.
It was a long journey to get where he is today, but he gained some fine techniques along the way. Matt is crafting some silky Pinot Noir from five different vineyards, a Pinot Brut Rosé, Chardonnay, a Syrah, and Cabernet Franc. And believe me when I say, I enjoy them all. When I return, we'll share details about their food and wine pairings, next on The Wine Road. Thanks for staying with me on The Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis. Now it's time to talk with Barb Gustafson about their food and wine pairing evenings. My wife and I attended their Pinot Noir pairing, and it was incredible, truly. And although I'm chatting with Barb, it would be incorrect to think she is the chef.
I'm definitely not the chef. I have, I think, featured one or two bites in all the 4 years that we've been doing our events, and they are not the highlight. They're usually the dessert.
Well, you're a wonderful hostess, and you certainly run your butt off taking care of everybody.
Yeah, coming from the restaurant service industry, customer satisfaction is pretty high up.
It's always guaranteed around here.
Yeah, and I working in a five-star environment, that doesn't ever get out of your system.
It was a fabulous night of just palate-pleasing fare, and I would almost say I was oversatiated with everything. It was so wonderful. You definitely get your money's worth.
We try to not make it super expensive, but it's not about us making money. It's actually an evening that is all about great food, great wine, and great company. And people usually walk away learning something that they haven't experience before, and so we don't make money. It's a really it's an enjoyment for us. It's a passion.
And actually, the night we were here, you had a chef working, so Matt could join us in the dining room.
Correct. I think we've had a chef maybe two or three different events. It's just how much he can handle. And when we focus on, the night that you were here, we focused on Pinot Noir and four different vintages. Actually five, but we needed him to be at the table to talk about the Pinot Noir, and he loves to cook, but that night I definitely didn't allow him to.
And we had four different courses and then a dessert course as well, so like five courses. And like I said, we went through quite a few vintages.
We typically do a minimum of five courses, just because they're not necessarily a full course. They're more like a partial. And
there were some I didn't finish because I was getting pretty full.
Well, that's what happens when you actually bring a chef in. Right. They don't really think about that kind of thing. They want to do it like a dining room plate. But when Matt actually does it, we focus on really just plating a product. And when we've done duck, he does many different preparations of duck, but your whole plate is the duck.
And you gather a good group of people, all who have interest in wine and food, so there's a lot of common ground between everyone at the table.
Yeah, I think that's the clientele we attract, is people who really love food, love wine, and appreciate the actual pairing. So there's usually some really good banter going around.
And give me some, just a quick examples of some of the fare you've had over the last few years.
Well, so we always really focus on a product. We've done, of course, duck, Liberty Duck. We've done oysters almost every year. We've done the Spice Shop in Santa Rosa. We've done beef with Freestone Beef. We've worked with Cowgirl Creamery. We've done so many. And then we've done a few where we just did all rosé wines, and then we did one that was all Cabernet Franc. And ours was, of course, only the one of the Cab Francs. And then we did, the last one was all Pinot. So we've done kind of a selection of whether it's a wine focus or a food focus, but it's all meant. And actually, the really fun ones were when we did a couple of cookbooks. We did Laura Whirlin's Grilled Cheese, Please, and her Macaroni and Cheese,
Please.
Yeah, wow. Which were both pretty crazy.
Well, you have a wonderful and comfortable tasting room here. You're on the corner of Grayton Road and Ross. And I see you have some cheese in your fridge there and some sausage too, maybe?
We always carry Zoe's salumi and Redwood Hills cheese as a picnic opportunity and Potter's crackers.
When are you typically open?
Thursday through Sunday, 10:30 to 4:30, and by appointment Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Great. We'll hope to see you again here soon, very soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Barb Gustafson of Paul Matthew Vineyards. Have I piqued your interest? The food, the wine, it's certainly worth looking into. Keep an eye on their website for their pairing dinners. And don't be surprised if you see Barb's husband, Matt, hanging out in the tasting room. Say hi. He's as good a conversationalist as he is a winemaker. Find them at paulmatthewvineyards.com. That's one T in Matthew and an S at the end of Vineyards. If you're listening to this on iTunes or another podcast provider, you can learn more about my show at onthewineroad.com and on Facebook as well. I'm on Instagram under the name JD Wineroad and on Twitter at JD Wineroad. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for listening to this podcast of On the Wine Road.